welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week, our hosts venture off to the cinema and return with their insightful reviews on Due Date, Megamind, and Fair Game. And now, without further ado, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Welcome, I'm Mr. Film.
And I'm Mr. Movie. First up, we have an R-rated buddy road trip comedy starring Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis called Due Date, released by Warner Brothers Pictures.
If you're going to travel with me to Los Angeles, I got to give you a couple guidelines. Number one, don't ask me a single question.
What's your favorite color? What age did you lose your virginity? Do you like hot dogs?
Number two,
if you're allergic to waffles, don't eat waffles.
Then don't take me to a Waffle House.
If I miss the birth of my child, I'm going to choke you out with your own scarf. Wrap that thing around your neck and choke you out.
Now, if you've seen the trailer for this movie, you've pretty much seen the whole picture and what it has to offer. It's the same antics stretched out to a little over an hour and a half, and it feels, well, a bit lame. The setup is this. Robert Downey Jr. plays Peter, and Zach Galifianakis is Ethan. They bump into each other at the airport, and through some lame misunderstandings, they get kicked off their flight to Los Angeles and put on the no-fly list. Peter has to get back to L.A. because his wife is having a baby, hence the lame title Due Date, and Ethan, a wannabe actor, is returning home from his father's funeral. Ethan is a total moron, a loser of a guy who does nothing but screw up every situation he's in and, on top of that, smokes a lot of pot. In short, he's lame too. And through various lame circumstances, Peter and Ethan share a ride and a road trip back to L.A., and that about sums up the whole movie. It's one lame circumstance after another, much of it not very funny. Zach Galifianakis is really the problem here. That Peter puts up with this lame-o rather than find another way home is, well, lame. Now, I don't want to be overly harsh, Mr. Film, and there are a few laughs to be had, but whatever strengths there are in this movie is all because of Robert Downey Jr. He's a great actor and way out of everyone else's league here. The laughs we get are thanks to him and his performance. But that only makes this movie a little less lame. Your experience while viewing this lame movie will go something like this. It'll feel something like this. Lame, 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 kind of funny, lame, a chuckle, lame, gross, a chuckle, disgustingly lame, lame, and lame. If it isn't clear by now, Mr. Film, I'm giving this movie an L for lame. And a grade of a C-, but only because of Robert Downey Jr. Otherwise, this movie is just lame.
Oh, Mr. Movie, to call Due Date just lame is almost to say it's good. This is probably the worst comedy I've seen in, I don't know, about 3 weeks. Simply put, it's just not funny. The situation isn't funny, the jokes aren't funny, and the characters are thoroughly unlikable. Sticking a moron and a guy with anger management issues together is like having a grease fire and throwing gasoline on it. Sure, the results can be spectacular, but it really isn't all that interesting. That being said, I'm with you that Robert Downey Jr. is about the only standout here. And for any lesser actor, this piece of garbage would have badly damaged their career and probably end it. But there are a couple of moments here, particularly a monologue that Peter delivers about how it's almost impossible to conceive that Ethan is still alive. That's almost amusing. And the very end, when we learn of Ethan's fate in Hollywood, is, again, almost, just almost amusing.
But lame.
But lame. But for those moments that are almost amusing, or sees the picture slowly moving in a more interesting direction, we have to endure masturbation jokes, including one with a dog. I think there were two with the dog. Numerous horrible run-ins with various rednecks, some of whom are handicapped. Stupid choices that require stupid, albeit successful, solutions. and a third act complication regarding Downey's friend, played by Jamie Foxx, that goes nowhere. As a matter of fact, just skip the entire third act of the film. Go out, get your money back, because you just really haven't missed anything. I found the whole thing unfunny, mean-spirited, and trite. But I agree with you just that Downey is interesting enough to watch. So I'll give it a D minus.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't say skip the third act. I say skip the whole movie.
Well, and yeah. Just I mean, watch if you find yourself somehow in the theater saying, how did I get here? You're probably worth smoking some of Ethan's pot. But be that as it may, if you find yourself there and you become lucid, just walk out. So.
All right. Let's move on to Megamind. I think we have.
All right.
Yeah.
Our next film is indeed Megamind. And in this one, we explore evil's need for good.
In the eternal struggle between good and evil, good has always prevailed. But this time, evil has a secret, incredible, totally handsome weapon. Me! Hit it! I make bad look so good. You're kidding, right?
When their planets explode simultaneously, aliens Megamind and Metro Man are sent hurtling through space toward Earth, where they live parallel lives, Megamind's leading, of course, to evil, and Metro Man to good. The two super characters battle for years until one day, Megamind actually wins. While the 94-minute 3D animated film from DreamWorks has an intriguing premise, what does evil do without good, it never really minds it for all it's worth. There are a lot of clever visual jokes, including send-ups of President Obama's famous campaign poster and Marlon Brando's Jor-El from the very first Superman movie. But the film just lacks the energy and dynamic bravado of Pixar's The Incredibles, which is probably my favorite of all the Pixar films, just to raise it beyond just a credible adventure here. The story complications for the kid-friendly PG-rated flick are okay, but there isn't much depth here and a lot of missed opportunities to really make the material shine with a satiric razor's edge. The biggest example of how the film just doesn't really deliver is after Megamind solves his good problem. There really isn't an exploration of the implications of superpowers or superheroes, nor when it's discovered that Metro Man, and I'm not giving anything away here, if you've seen the trailer, you know this, has really survived his supposed fatal encounter with Megamind. Again, there's a missed opportunity to really discuss, even in kid-friendly terms, about why Metro Man was fated to be a hero and why the people of Metro City even need him. What could have been positively subversive, having the people of Metro City just rise up and reject superheroes outright, and they have plenty of reasons to do so because of the events of the film. Instead, we're delivered a third act that's all about redemption, love, and understanding. It works in its own simplified way, but again, left me a little wanting. The animation is good. I found the E3D just a little overwhelming. And the production design is clean and serviceable, but not with that punch that The Incredibles have. Will Ferrell is fun as Megamind. His primary shtick is mispronunciation. For instance, he calls Metro City Metrocity. Jonah Hill as Titan probably has the most interesting character, the wannabe good guy who's bad to the bone. And Tina Fey continues to stick with her smarter-than-the-boys role. But she and Ferrell have good voice chemistry here, and it'd be interesting to see them in a live-action flick sometime. Brad Pitt has the least to do in the entire picture, but he does a good serviceable job here. Megamind isn't a great film, but it's serviceable, so I'll give it a B.
Mr. Film, I think you broke out the celluloid pipe again here. I mean...
I just saw Due Date before that, so maybe that's what happened. I got a little bit of those fumes.
Yeah, I think that DreamWorks is now giving Pixar a run for its money. I mean, earlier this year, they released How to Train Your Dragon, which I think is one of the best pictures of the year all around.
Okay.
And I think Megamind measures up to that.
Really?
Now, I think you missed the mark here. I mean, the movie isn't about an exploration of superpowers and whatnot. It's an exploration of values and ambition and choosing your own destiny. Metroman, for example, is sort of pushed into being a superhero, but he doesn't really love it. And as for Megamind, as the story unfolds, we see that he's not motivated by being evil per se, but more by the fight itself. And he wants to pair himself against an equal and fight to be the best. Now, he usually loses his fights, which is kind of funny, but that doesn't stop him. And he's always trying to improve his tactics to win the fight. So when he does, he really doesn't know what to do. And as the story unfolds, he sort of naturally finds that fighting for good has more of a payoff. And there are some excellent themes here that values as such are positive, pro-life, pro-good things that bring purpose to one's life as ends in themselves. Megamind's journey here is fun and sympathetic. He's not the evil guy out to destroy the good for the sake of it. He's really just a lonely kid in the back of the class who doesn't get picked for sports and whatnot because he's different. So he's sympathetic here, and his transition to being good is really believable. Now, the shticks you mentioned, I think, are funny, and the mispronunciations are good, and the impressions of Marlon Brando, I thought it was from The Godfather, but, you know, it's Marlon Brando, basically, yeah. are quite a treat. But a bit of warning to parents. I don't think this movie is for very young kids, so leave them at home. They do reveal in this movie that there is no such thing as the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy, so if your kids still believe in such fantasies, wait until they're old enough to understand these things before sitting them down to watch this. But when they are, this is a real treat. Plenty of entertainment for kids and adults alike. Seeing it in 3D is well worth the price of admission, I think. I'm giving this an A, Mr. Film.
Okay, well, all right. I think you bring up some good points. I do. I mean, I did like that whole play that Megamind really isn't just a bad guy. You know, he is this kind of misunderstood character, and that he only sees his only option as to be evil. But I was hoping that it would kind of do. I think the one thing that Pixar does a little bit better typically is that it kind of plays, it does what a good like a lot of the old Warner Brothers cartoons did. It plays on almost like two levels, and I think this played on about a level and a half for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with you. This is a little scary for kids. There was a couple kids sitting near me. They were a little terrified through a good chunk of the film. So that is a good warning. But I think you make some good points here. I'm still not convinced that it's an A, but I think it is a worthwhile film to go see, and definitely much more so than some of the other kids' films that we've reviewed in earlier shows.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And, you know, comparing it to Pixar, it really feels now like Pixar is recycling its movies with Toy Story 3 and Cars 2 and whatnot.
Yeah.
And DreamWorks is now creating original stories based on basic human values. And these are really original stories. I mean, the idea of the evil guy winning and then, you know, the real superhero, that's kind of, it feels new to me anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, the last Toy Story movie, I don't know if you saw it, but it was nearly a horror movie. A really bad direction for the now Disney-owned Pixar. And Cars, I think, was one of Pixar's worst movies. I don't know why they're bringing that again. I guess it made a bunch of money at the box office, but I didn't think that was a good story.
It was merchandising, I think. I think the merchandising made a lot of money.
I'm sure it did.
It didn't make a lot of money. But I agree with you. I agree with you there. And I hope that DreamWorks continues. There's a couple of other animated films coming out in the next few weeks that I think we should visit. There might be more for adults, but also have a kid-friendly message as well. And I think we're really starting to see maybe Pixar set the stage for this kind of more interesting take on use of animation, and I think we're seeing the profits of that sowing those seeds in DreamWorks and some of these other films that are going to be coming out soon. So it's a good sign. Again, I think this was a good film. It just didn't blow me away. I was hoping for something a little bit more. So, but I think you made some good points about the values and such.
Great. Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, definitely go check out How to Train Your Dragon. That's better than this. And like I said, one of the best movies of the year. So hopefully we'll circle back to that towards the end of the year when we look at some of these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mr. Film, let's move on to our next movie here, which is Fair Game, released by Summit Entertainment. It's a near 1 hour, 50-minute PG-13 rated political thriller based on the real-life story of Valerie Plame, the CIA agent whose identity was blown by a leak from the George Bush White House, seemingly as retribution for her husband's outspoken questioning of the knowledge, or lack thereof, of WMDs in Iraq as justification for going to war.
My name is everywhere, my real name.
Those in the highest office thought to destroy the career of a covert agent to punish me for telling the truth.
People threatened to kill my husband, hurt my children.
We've got to strike back.
They've pushed you until they find the point at which you break. You can't break me. I don't have a breaking point.
I liked Naomi Watts' portrayal of Valerie Plame. She's a strong woman whose breaking point is truly tested, not by the enemy in defense of her country, but by her own country in defense of her career. Sean Penn is fine here as the outspoken husband, though a little preachy and pedantic at certain points. There's also an interesting take on lying in this. When Plame is asked how she can lie so easily by her friend, she says, "Remember why you're lying and what it's for." And this is an interesting psychological point. When lying is morally justified, the feelings of guilt or getting caught disappear. And I do believe that lying in rare circumstances can be moral. For example, if a holdup man asks where the money is, it's perfectly fine to tell him that you don't have any. But these are all side points, and there are many side points in the movie that I did like. But side points do not a movie make. The biggest problem is that it's too slow and not dramatic enough. Too much happens off screen, and long periods of time are skipped over without much indication of having done so, and you just kind of have to infer that time has passed. But the biggest problem, I think, is in the fact that this is a true story, and I think that takes away from the drama here. I understand this movie has an agenda, and it is an interesting perspective that is, at the very least, worthy of taking a look at, but as a movie, the reality of what happened necessarily makes the theme pretty narrow. As a political thriller, that robs it of what we as audiences have come to expect from this genre. This is really a movie for political junkies, and if you are one, depending on your political affiliations, you'll probably either love it or hate it. But I'm not, and I didn't feel either way. It was interesting at points, boring at points, and all around just a small bump above average. For that reason, Mr. Film, I think I'm going to give it a C+.
I think you're on the money here. I think for me, Fair Game was actually kind of an interesting picture as I was watching it, coming on the heels of all the documentaries we've watched over the last couple of weeks that have tried to tackle really complex issues and historical events. Most recently, The Inside Job, which, as we discussed, was just, you know, wow, you know, just this overwhelming data that really didn't lead to anywhere. But because I think the Valerie Plame affair really lends itself to that format, to a documentary format rather than a docudrama. And no matter how you feel about the Iraq War, it's pretty clear now that it was started because members of the Bush administration wanted to have a war with Iraq and was looking for a justification for it. Now, as the director Doug Liman, who brought us the Jason Bourne trilogy, portrays it, Plame and her fellow CIA agents looked at the facts of Saddam's nuclear program while running numerous dangerous cat-and-mouse intelligence operations. And what they found was that there wasn't a program. Now, they're all heroic, hardworking, hard-headed professionals, and that they were betrayed by politically ambitious colleagues and administration officials who cared only about their agendas and not the facts. And the fallout probably further damaged our intelligence apparatus, and particularly with Plame, who was running numerous operations. All those were shut down. They sacrificed a lot of people. A lot of people got killed because of that. Now, that's powerful stuff. But unfortunately, what we get here in the docudrama that we're given is a mishmash of spying, political intrigue, domestic drama, and a heavy-handed critique of the Bush administration. Now, I appreciate Lyman's take on the whole scandal, but I think this is the wrong form. Naomi Watts is fine as Valerie Plame, but I think Sean Penn is hopelessly miscast, and mainly you touched on that because of his preachiness. And I got lost a few times during the film, not quite understanding how all the pieces fit together. And that probably, as you pointed out, has to do with the fact that a lot of things happen off stage. But most of all, I didn't really understand Penn, who plays Plame's husband, motivation for fighting back against the administration. Was it principle? Was it ego? Was it something else? In the docudrama, we need to have that scene that explains what his motivation is. And a scene late in the picture with Sam Shepard, which I think was supposed to give us insight into Valerie's reasons for going on the record, just didn't work for me. It seemed something straight out of a weird, absurdist drama. But I think that if this was produced as a straight documentary with Plame, whose book this was based on, Wilson and some of the other players interviewed about what happened, how it happened, why it happened, then I think we would have a very interesting and compelling piece of filmmaking. And a document with just about one person showing very clearly how wars can be manufactured. Now, that being said, the filmmaking's good, particularly the opening sequences with more of the spying stuff that Valerie Plame did. And there are some good scenes with Naomi Watts later in the picture. I'm going to give it a C.
All right, that's good. Yeah, no, I agree with you pretty much on what you're saying. I mean, I just think that they were trying to cover too much here. And if we go back and look at something like Social Network, which is sort of a docudrama in a way that was done very well, based on true events and whatnot, it's interesting to see the different styles in terms of how they try to approach it. I think they really narrowed down the message and the theme in Social Network and made that work really well and chewed on all the ideas in there. Whereas here, there's just too much and you can't get to everything. And so it just seems very rushed and you're jumping around too much and you just feel confused. You're not really sure, where you are and that kind of thing. So
yeah, and with something like this, you really have to have that real focus. Social Network is a great example. And I was thinking of Social Network particularly at the end, because it ends with, and again, I'm not giving anything away because most people who go see this picture will know the basic story. You see Valerie Plame addressing Congress, and they actually cut to her real testimony. That would have been probably a better framing device, or they should have fictionalized it more, and picked one aspect of what was going on. The domestic cost, the political stuff, fact versus fiction, something very much more narrowed in than this kind of shotgun approach to try to get her whole life on screen in this hour and 50-minute picture.
All right. Well, it's good to see we're in agreement on that one.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps the show for this week. Mr. Film gave Due Date a D-, and I gave it a C-.
Too generous. And I gave Megamind a B, and Mr. Movie gave it an A, calling it probably one of the best films of the year.
Well, almost.
Almost.
It's in the same league as one of the best.
Okay.
One of the best movies
in the same league as one of the best films of the year.
There we go. All right, and for Fair Game, Mr. Film gave it a C, and I gave it a C+.
Looking forward to next show. We have Unstoppable with Denzel Washington, and Morning Glory, a comedy starring Harrison Ford and Rachel McAdams. And we are going to go back to another documentary. This one's Marin Call, which looks very intriguing. I think it'll be worth everyone checking out.
All right. Well, that wraps the show for this week. Visit our website at www.moviefilmshow.com. If you have a comment or question or want to send us some feedback, just email us at mail@moviefilmshow.com. And tell your friends to subscribe to us in iTunes. Just go to our website and click on the iTunes link in the subscribe box. And that's it for this week, Mr. Film. I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next show, Mr. Movie.
Starring Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis, called Road Trip. No, that's not what it's called. It's called Due Date.
Okay.
Right here. All right. Let me try that again. Lame, 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 and lame. If it isn't clear by now, Mr. Film, I'm giving this movie an L for lame.
Sticking Mr. Film and Mr. Movie together is like having a grease fire and throwing gasoline on it.
Mr. Film, I think you broke out the celluloid pipe again here. I mean...
You're kidding, right?